Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about the difference between high fructose corn syrup and cane sugar. Your body does know a difference. We're also going to look at self-fulfilling prophecy. People's opinions of others determines how cooperative they are. I think it's important that we understand that. How to protect yourself from radiation poisoning, because people are always getting x-rays of one type or another, or maybe in an environment that exposed them. Also, low blood sugar and digestion. There's a connection. Selenium detoxifies the body of toxic mercury and reverses aging. I'll share that. And how hot chocolate can prevent memory decline, and more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at the fracking boom. It's been accompanied by a rise of silent, deadly carcinogens in your home. From Common Dreams, John Quealy. Then how Big Pharma exploits all of us with exorbitant cancer drug prices, and it's not due to research. It's due to corrupt monopolies. J.D. Hayes, Natural News. The Big Chill, how big money is buying off criticism of big money, Robert Wright. Then the police cannot police themselves, and now the public is too scared to cooperate with them, by Mikey Kendall, The Washington Post. And then the failure to regulate pesticide data fraud comes home to roost, from Carol Van Strum, Truth Out. Also today, we'll take a look at how Hillary Clinton has been engaged in so many scandals. I'll give you the latest. And yet, she is the darling of the corporate left. Why? Well, I'll share a few thoughts. Saving seeds. Farmers rise up against industry-backed laws. We'll share the latest on that, because we should be saving organic heirloom seeds. And letters from Ralph Nader to the president. Didn't know that he wrote any. Turns out he wrote a lot. I'd like to know what those letters had to say and if any presidents responded to him. Chris Hedges. For Nader, defiance is a way of life. From Truth Dig. Plus, we will have two audio clips from the Young Turks taking a look at social issues that involve us all. Let's begin. First up, most people are not aware that we have an epidemic of non-alcohol fatty liver disease in this country. Now, normally, if you drank a lot of alcohol, your liver is going to be saturated with fat and frequently sclerosed, diseased. That can adversely affect your body's ability to get toxins out of the body because toxins are filtered through the liver. Yes, the kidneys, but the liver is mainly the organ that conjugates, meaning brings together toxins and allows them to be in a form that can be taken right out. Okay, that's good. It's very good, providing that you feed the liver and keep it clean and healthy so it can produce this glutathione, the number one detoxifying nutrient, and everything works fine. But when you're drinking alcohol, whoa, that really screws up your liver. So therefore, you can't get a lot of toxins out of your body. Hence, you can suffer from autotoxemia. But now we know that sugar can also infiltrate the liver and causing all kinds of problems. And fat does the same. So here's the latest from Bethany Scortino from Natural News on this. I thought it was very good because what it does, it challenges the makers of the high fructose corn syrup, which is in everything. Soft drinks are the number one place where they put this stuff. And a current television commercial from the Corn Refiners Association touts the quality of high fructose corn syrup and compares it to cane sugar. It claims, quote, when it comes to corn sugar, or cane sugar, your body doesn't know the difference. Sugar is sugar. Well, true sugar is sugar, but it certainly is not high fructose corn syrup, a highly processed sweetener that is linked to obesity and a lot of other health problems. This undoubtedly is the reason for the marketing strategy of changing its name to corn sugar, an attempt to have consumers believe that all sugar is created equal. Well, not all sugars are equal. And here's how it works. I'll make it as simple as possible. Sugar is the broad-spectrum term for sucrose, lactose, maltose. Now, sucrose is the form most commonly found in foods, or table sugar. A derivative of sugar, beets, or cane sugar, that's where it comes from. And fructose is derived from fruits, lactose from milk, and maltose from malted foods like barley. So when you drink beer that's made from barley malt, you're getting these maltose sugars. But then you have this odd character, the high fructose corn syrup. It's derived from highly processed corn, a starchy grain. It has near equal amounts of fructose and sucrose and is similar to table sugar from a compounding perspective. But unlike fruit, this type of fructose is not bound to fiber, causing the body to process it faster and leaving the body unsatisfied. Starches and grains, well, they're different because starches and grain often have a higher glycemic index than all sugars, and corn falls in that same category. In addition, almost all of the United States corn production is genetically modified. That's a bad thing. A Princeton University study showed rats gained significantly more weight when consuming high fructose corn syrup in comparison to table sugar, even when the caloric intake was the same. And more interestingly, as the rats' accessibility to sucrose was equal to the sweetness of sugar in high fructose corn syrup was half as sweet as that found in soft drinks. So the rats who consumed the high fructose corn syrup gained 48% more weight than their sucrose peers and had significant deposits of abdominal fat and circulating triglycerides, both bad. So in humans, these are characteristics of obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. Now let me just give you an example here. You've heard me mention many times on the program that you should pay attention to foods based upon their glycemic index. Glucose is released into your bloodstream when you eat a food, all right, any carbohydrate, and it's metabolized from carbohydrates. The glycemic index is the rate at which the body processes the glucose. A high glycemic index indicates food that is rapidly absorbed by the body. A low glycemic index indicates a food that is slowly absorbed and prevents spike in blood sugars by releasing small amounts of insulin from the pancreas. In turn, your body is more likely to use glucose as fuel rather than stored as fat. Mass release of insulin causes a rapid drop in blood sugar, signaling hunger in the brain. This is why diabetics use carb counting as a method of sugar control, eating small meals every 2 to 3 hours to moderately release glucose and avoid rapid spikes and dips in blood sugars, that roller coaster up and down. Now, the type of sugar glycemic index you have stevia that has zero. That's terrific, and that's why it's a good natural sweetener. You have xylitol that only has 7. You have agave, which is 15 to 30. Fructose is 17. Brown rice is 25. Honey, raw honey is 30. Organic sugar is 47, and raw sugar is 65. Colas are 70, corn syrup is 75, table sugar is 80, high fructose corn syrup is 87, and then maltodextrin is 150. So the lower the number, the healthier the sugar is on your metabolism. The higher the number, the more problems you have with obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. It's that simple. Well, another good study shows that self-fulfilling prophecy, people's opinions of others determine how cooperative they are. This is from Science Daily. Quote, the expectations people have about how others will behave play play a large role in determining whether people cooperate with each other or not. And moreover, the very first expectations or impressions is hard to change. Quote, this is particularly true when the impression is a negative one. And this is from the Max Planck Institute for Research on Collective Goods in Bonn, summarizing the key findings of the study in which he and his colleagues came up with these results. One's own expectation, therefore, becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Those who expect people to act selfishly actually experience uncooperative behavior from others more often. So let's think about that for a moment. In previous studies, researchers have successfully put participants into a social dilemma with such games, and they're very popular, by the way, in experimental economics. We wanted to find out, quote, whether the broken window theory held true in the lab as well. According to this theory, minor details like broken windows in abandoned buildings or rubbish on the streets can give rise to desolate conditions like the utter neglect of a district. Quote, such signs of neglect give people the impression that social standards do not apply there. And by the way, explaining the idea behind the theory, which was the motivation behind New York Mayor Giuliani's decision to embark on the zero-tolerance strategy he employed to clean up the city back in the 1990s. In their study, these three scientists tested the theory in a scientific experiment using a kind of public good games that are often applied in the field of experimental economics. Their aim was to find out the extent to which first impressions determine how people will behave and the extent to which they can be influenced by selective information. Well, the outcome was that your first impression is almost always what you create your reality of another person to be. So let's just put this in a little different way. Let's just say that you met someone in a social environment and the person started off the conversation with a negative, or they were gossipy, or they put someone down, or they were bragging. All of these, the brain is responding to saying, well, that's a negative, that's a negative, that's a negative. This is not someone I could trust, because if they're going to gossip about other people, they're going to gossip about me. So I don't want to be around them. Or let's say that you meet someone and they tend to be quiet, but they smile and they shake your hand and look you in the eyes and in a very soft way say, very nice to meet you. Immediately the brain senses, this is okay. I can trust this person. This is not bad. So I don't think we appreciate how powerful first impressions are of creating an expectation within us. Now, it may or may not be true. You could have someone who's loud or obnoxious who, and once they get to know you, you know, you find they're a very nice person, or you can get a very shy person who turns out not to be nice at all. It doesn't hold true in all cases, but it's our impressions that are important, not merely what the person does, but what the person does creates our impressions. So that's what this study showed. Now, opiates are now the most prescribed class of medications in America. This is really not healthy. This is from Science Daily, and this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, research done at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine and the National Institute on Drug Abuse. And they're two separate reports, and they show a drastic shift in prescribing patterns impacting the magnitude of opiate substances in America. And they say that these are major public health risks. And, for example, oxycodone, there was a huge increase in the prescriptions of this over the last 10 years. You get hooked on that, you've got hooked on something that's stronger than cocaine or heroin. Quote, the scope of the problem is vast. Opiate overdose is now the second leading cause of accidental death in the United States, and the prevalence is second only to marijuana. Wow. Why? Why are people using it? Well, it's simple. It's pain relief. But then when they start seeing pain relief, then they no longer have the pain, but then how that euphoria impacts them, kind of disconnect from the realities around them. That's what's important here. So, my suggestion, we should have non-toxic, non-invasive therapy pain clinics in every community in America, because half of all doctor visits are for pain. We have every kind of mind-body meditation, biofeedback, which can control pain. Acupuncture controls pains. Herbs like cat's claw and cayenne and feverfew, all great for pain. We have magnesium, which is the most powerful mineral there is for pain. It can relieve muscle spasms, premenstrual spasms and cramps. And we're not promoting this. We're not advocating it and using it preventatively. If every woman who has PMS, and especially with menstrual cramps, which can be devastating, I've seen people, even employees, who during their period, they can't come to work for a day or two because of cramps. They're not faking it. These are real. But if you advocate, well, all right, take 1,400 milligrams or up to bowel tolerance of magnesium citrate, and take 1,000 milligrams of calcium citrate, and then there are some acupuncture points on your body that you can hold for 30 seconds that can trigger a turning off pain response, how biofeedback can turn off pain anywhere in the body, TENS units, slight magnetic pulses into the brain that can turn off migraines. Think of the amount of suffering that we could prevent, and think of the amount of money we could save. So it's worth it, and yet we're not doing it. So in its place, people take the drug. It has very serious side effects. It's bad for your liver. It's bad for your kidneys. It's bad for your brain. But it does put people in that euphoric state. And once people get used to being in that state, especially before, if they were in a stressful environment, a home environment, work environment, it allows them to still function, but it means they're functioning in an altered state. It's a very dangerous drug. Now, we'll conclude the section with how to protect yourself from radiation poisoning. And in the wake of the Japanese nuclear disaster, radiation has contaminated the food and water supply of the ocean in Japan, but also now we're measuring water that has radiation in it off the coast of California. It's reached us. It's also gone, because of the circulating currents, it's already hit Canada and other points higher up. And the fish are being polluted, so I wouldn't eat anything out of the Pacific now, no seaweed or fish. According to Randall Neustadler, that radioactive particles have been carried to distant lands, and we are told that they are at too low a doses to negatively impact us. How can they determine that when a person with a faulted immune system cannot tolerate any radiation? And as the greatest radiation scientist in American history has told me many times on my program, he said, there is no such thing as a safe dose of radiation. All radiation is dangerous, because once in the body, it doesn't dissipate. It'll be there all of your life. So taking in small amounts on a regular basis, it accumulates. Bad idea. So no one should be exposed to radiation from nuclear reactors in Japan or here in the United States, or those x-rays that we take too routinely. There's three simple principles involved in detoxification. The most important is chelation, or the binding and removal of heavy metals and other toxins in the body. Second, the body has its own methods of detoxification, which can be encouraged. And third, antioxidants will scour and remove free radicals that have been created by oxidative damage. Everybody can take supplements and get good results and protect your body from heavy metals and radiation toxicity. Chelation can be accomplished by being in the hands of a physician who chelates, or doing oral chelation. For example, let's say you didn't want to go to the doctor. You could take a 2-ounce glass of wheatgrass juice 3 times a day with ginger in it and garlic, and that's a terrific natural chelator. The blue-green algae in spirulina, which is also blue-green algae, contain chlorophyllin, and chlorophyllin binds toxic elements in your gut. great for chelating, especially if you have mercury, lead, cadmium, heavy poisonings. So seaweed also is able to inhibit absorption of toxins in the digestive tract. And there is what is called brown seaweed. It's laminaria, and it contains sodium alginate, which has been shown to chelate heavy metals and treat radiation sickness. You also have modified citrus pectin, modified citrus, C-I-T-R-U-S, pectin, P-E-C-T-I-N. Many studies show that it can remove heavy metals like lead, mercury, arsenic from the body. And pectins, that's, by the way, what our grandparents, maybe our parents, used to do when they canned things. They would have this sugary jelly concoction that they would put canned fruits in, jarred fruits, and that's pectins. And the pectins and alginates are polysaccharides known as polyneuridines, molecules that form chains in an egg box structure that attract and trap radioactive metals. And generally it's about 5 grams a day of the powder. And then you have what is called zeolite, Z-O, Z-E-O, light, L-I-T-E. Zeolite is a naturally occurring mineral that has a crystalline structure that traps metals. In my opinion, it's one of the best that there is, and it can remove depleted uranium from the body, 5 grams a day. And then the body has natural chelating agents, and it also helps this process. If you give it enough green juices to allow these to kick in, and it can help. And glutathione, gluta, G-L-U-T-A-T-H-O-T-H-I-O-N, glutathione, is the body's primary antioxidant. It can be produced in every cell of the body, but the liver, as I mentioned earlier in the program, is the primary source. And glutathione is capable of breaking down carcinogens and heavy metals. And supplements like NAC, N-acetylcysteine, and alpha-lipoic acid also support glutathione production. And a reduced lysosomal glutathione supplement can also be used to increase glutathione directly. Milk thistle, or its active ingredient, supports liver cell synthesis and promotes glutathione production. And L-glutamine is the amino acid that protects the small intestine lining from radiation damage. Probiotics and prebiotics are also, including beta-glucans and inulin, will maintain healthy intestinal lining. And then coenzyme Q10, grapeseed extract from resveratrol, krill oil, vitamin C, those are also terrific. So, now you know what to do. If you've been exposed to radiation from an x-ray or any other source, you could help yourself. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a brief break and come back. We got a lot more program to come. And as always, information that empowers. Please stay with us. I need the number. When Jesus wore, oh, when he wore, when Jesus wore, wash my sins away. Oh, happy day. Oh, happy day. Oh, happy day. I'd like to welcome you if you've just tuned across the dial. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to make a difference in people's lives by sharing insights and information that can help you. And later on, we're going to talk about the fracking boom accompanied by rise of silent, deadly carcinogen in the homes from John Quealy. We're going to talk about Big Pharma's exorbitant cancer drug prices are due to corrupt monopolies. And the big chill, how big money is buying off criticism of big money, and the police can't police themselves, and now the public is too scared to cooperate with them from Mikey Kendall. So we have a lot of information to share with you, and then we're going to hear from very important discussion from the Young Turks. Two different clips. I think you'll find it important. But first, some good news. 2 years. 2 years we've been out of Bug Out and Rock Hard. Because I wanted to perfect the formula. I wanted to take it from a tablet into a liquid. I've been working on this for a long time. My patience proved out because today I can announce we now have, for the first time in 2 years, Bug Out and Rock Hard back in inventory as new and improved products. A big jar, 4 fluid ounces. Now, for those of you who don't know what Bug Out is, well, I have the capsicum, which is one of the single most important herbs you can put into the body. And I also put in Cascara Sagrada, aged bark, and Cinchona bark, clove bud, cramp bark, LA campaign root, fennel seed, garlic bulb, black, the fresh black walnut, green hulls, mullein leaf, pumpkin seed, quiaza, thyme, wormwood, cinnamon bark, oregano leaf, and peppermint leaf. And there's nothing else. That's it. It's a liquid. It is the best that I could do. And I believe that it is the finest possible usage for those who possibly have eaten something they shouldn't, or traveling to another country, maybe eating in a restaurant, maybe eating in a restaurant. You don't go into the kitchen. You don't see whether or not they've washed their hands or whether the salad's been washed. If you ever went into a kitchen, it's highly unlikely you'd want to eat any of at least the foods that hands touch. We just have no idea about lacking in sanitation in this country. I wish people were more aware of it. Anyhow, always have a jar of the liquid. It's in a dropper. 20 drops when you need it. Bug Out. There's nothing like it. Absolutely nothing like it. And now it is in a form that can be fully, completely utilized and absorbed by the body immediately. Just in, after 2 years not having it at all. Because I like to always improve things. And when I'm improving them, it takes time for it to come back in. So now it's back. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. If for any reason that number is busy and you can't get through or no one picks up, call 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. Now, I also have another product that I'll tell you about in a moment, and that is the toothpaste. I was without a toothpaste for over a year because I wanted to get an improved toothpaste, and so I went to the best part of what it is to have a fresh, clean mouth. And I wanted to do something different. I wanted to give a bigger tube, and this is almost twice the size of the old one. It's right up there with Tom's Amain in size. And I wanted to give it at almost half the price of the previous one. So I've achieved both, and I'm very excited by that. So now we have a new toothpaste, and that's good. But I'm going to come back to that in a moment. I just want you to focus for this second on the fact that we do have Bug Out back in inventory as a new and improved product. All right? Now we're going to go over and hear a comment now about the Young Turks and on a social issue that is not getting the attention at all in the mainstream media, but we like to bring you information that no one else is and with some insight. Well, let me just do this before I do that, because some people, when they call, they'll want to be interested in the Rock Hard at the same time. And this is for all the men in this audience, all right? And you knew that for 20 years, Rock Hard was my probably second most popular requested product. But it was gone because I felt I wanted to take it to the next level. I wanted a whole new generation, a whole new way of helping men and with what is unique in what men need. And Rock Hard is it. It's in liquid form. It's in a vegetable glycerin base. And this is as good as it gets. Men, here is what I put in Rock Hard for you. And women in the audience who want to help the men in your life, number one ingredient, yohimbe bark. Then oat straw herb. Then saw palmetto berry. Then we have epimedium herb. Ginkgo biloba leaf, ginger root. Eleutherococcus sinicoccus root. Mirapuama root. Lycium berry. Fresh ashwagandha root, velvet bean seed, anise seed, cardamom seed, and cinnamon bark. Those are the things that make a difference. It's in liquid form. That means it can be used immediately in the body. And you want to take it about, I would say, an hour before you want to do anything Rock Hard. So give a call. It's back. And it is special. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now let's hear from the Young Turks.
Latino LAPD officials have been awarded $4 million after they shot and killed an unarmed autistic man back in 2010, got reprimanded for it, and apparently did not like the fact that they got reprimanded for it. They are claiming that they were discriminated as a result of the punishment that they received for shooting and killing this unarmed man. Now, the picture that you saw was the victim of the shooting. His name is Stephen Eugene Washington. And so let me tell you how this all went down. Apparently, the two officers were placed on desk duty indefinitely after the fatal shooting of the 27-year-old Stephen Eugene Washington in March of 2010. Corrales and Diego, those are the police officers, were on gang patrol near Los Angeles' Koreatown when they said they heard a deep boom. After that, they said Washington came up to them and looked like he was taking something out of his wristband. So initial reports indicated that what happened was they were on patrol. They saw a man walking by himself after midnight in Koreatown and that he looked suspicious. So they started talking to him, trying to get his attention, and he ignored them, right? Now, this guy is autistic, and according to his family, he's afraid of strangers, so he continued to ignore them and walk away. And so since he didn't listen, the police officers claimed that he reached for something in his waistband, and they thought it was going to be a gun. They were afraid for their lives, and so they started to shoot at him. One of the cops successfully shot him in the head and killed him. Officers Alan Corrales, 35, and George Diego, 34, simply did what they were trained to do when they shot and killed an unarmed man with autism.
Well, that's the only part of their story that I somewhat agree with. I think that oftentimes they are trained to shoot at the slightest provocation. So in the old days, again, there would have been a freeze, put your hands up, you know, et cetera. Now, you don't give him a chance to put his hands up. You don't give him a chance to do anything. You don't give him a chance to show whether he has a gun or not. That, but by definition, you don't know whether he has a gun. But you shoot him in the head just in case. I mean, he's reaching for something. Okay, it's pretty suspicious that they heard a boom as they were driving by, right? Okay, but you're trailing the guy.
You're following him.
You're following him. He's, what do you hear? A boom from behind. It's not him.
Look, Cenk, you and I are not investigators. We weren't there on the night of the shooting, right?
No.
So we don't know better, right? Something must have occurred that we're completely unaware of, and we're not giving the cops the benefit of the doubt. Although there was an investigation into this, and according to reports, a civilian commission ruled in 2011 that the officers were not justified in the shooting. As a result, the LAPD put them on desk duty indefinitely. That's the reason why they were punished. End of story. Now, they filed a lawsuit against the LAPD because they claimed, no, this has nothing to do with us shooting someone that we shouldn't have shot. This has to do with the fact that we're Latino. Which is absolutely ridiculous. And the amazing thing is, their case won. The jurors were convinced that these two police officers were discriminated against because they're Latino. Now, let me tell you what they did in order to make their case. They gave an example of a white police officer who also shot an unarmed man, and he was also punished. However, he was punished for about 6 weeks. Okay? They were punished indefinitely.
They're like, wait, that's not fair. Why don't we get to kill unarmed people for no reason? You're discriminating against Latino cops. We'd like to murder people, too. And why? Oh, and now we got punished so severely. We got to keep our jobs, but we're on desk duty. We weren't arrested. I mean, we shot the guy in the head, even though he had no weapon, nothing on him. He, by the way, you want to know the real reason? Based on this fact pattern, and again, a commission already decided they were not justified in the shooting. Mm-hmm. My speculation is they were saying something to him, and he wouldn't listen to them because he has autism. They disrespected him. Okay. How this guy with autism disrespected the cops? How could he? They won $4 million because the police chief said, I'm afraid to have them back on the streets. I mean, we have a commission ruling saying they shot the guy for almost no reason, mm-hmm. and they shot him in the head and killed him. I can't put them. If he put them back on the street, somebody else would win $4 million when they shoot the next guy,
so
right?
So in this case, the police officer, or in this case, the police chief that does the right thing, gets punished, okay? The people that do the wrong thing get rewarded, and mind you, they each got around $2 million each, right? Which is devastating when you consider the fact that the victim, the real victim's mother, Stephen Washington's mother, received $950,000 for her son's death.
We killed your son. Here's $1 million. Oh, by the way, the guys who killed him were giving him $2 million apiece.
It's amazing.
Okay, and what sense does that make to say, by the way, we're going to give money to both sides? The shooting was so obviously unjustified that we're going to give you $1 million. And for the guys who did the shooting, even though it was unjustified, but they put you on desk duty, perfectly reasonable action to take when the shooting was unjustified, and we can't have you shooting people in the head in the streets, we're going to give you $2 million apiece. Yeah. Madness, man. Sheer madness.
Now, that's the Young Turks. And again, we did not hear about this in the major media. And this whole postscript that the cops got $4 million and kept their jobs. It's just amazing. But that's not the only thing that they're concerned with. Here's another clip. Please listen.
For well over a year, the United States has been conducting closed-door negotiations with Iran over the future of its nuclear program. And during almost the entirety of those negotiations, Israel has allegedly been spying on the communication between the U.S. and Iran and other partners in those negotiations, and then giving its intel to Republicans in the U.S. Congress. Now, what's perhaps most surprising about this, and we're going to go into how the U.S. Detected that they were being spied on, and some of the consequences long-term of the U.S. knowing that Israel was not only looking into those negotiations, but attempting to derail them by spreading them to President Obama's political enemies, but that the U.S. isn't even particularly frustrated about the first part of that, just the giving it to the Republicans. We have a senior U.S. official anonymously saying, "It is one thing for the U.S. and Israel to spy on each other. It is another thing for Israel to steal U.S. secrets and play them back to U.S. legislators to undermine U.S. diplomacy." And so that is pretty surprising. Now, what you will not be surprised to find out is that Israel frequently spies not just on, you know, the United States or on other states, most places that they can, they will spy on, and that the U.S. spies on Israel and all of our other enemies and allies as well. I think that to assume that there is not constant spying going on, regardless of military or economic allyship or not, is a little bit naive, but that they would then use that information not just for their own political calculus domestically, but to attempt to derail a process in an ally of theirs. And so that was surprising to me. Now, overall, we found out the White House discovered the operation when U.S. intelligence agencies spying on Israel intercepted communications among Israeli officials that carried details the U.S. believed could only have come from access to the confidential talks. And so there, they are admitting that, yes, we're angry that Israel has been spying and then spreading it, but we found out by spying on them. So at a base level, mutual spying going on.
Yeah, so two funny things about that. One, we have to out ourselves as spying
as
on
spying
them.
As spying on them.
To be outraged about their spying. So, yeah, yeah. I mean, a little glass house we're living in. All right. Now, at the same time, later in the Wall Street Journal article, they explained that, well, we have a special relationship with Israel, so we don't really sweat it too much when they spy on us. Like, we know the Chinese and the Russians, and actually the French also spy on us a lot, right? Yeah. But we try to counteract that a lot because we don't want the Chinese and the Russians knowing our secrets. Mm. At least the French are allies. Still not a pleasant thing, right?
Yeah. But no, they're not remotely pleasant.
Yes. Not pleasant that they're spying on. Look, and so we're doing our own spying, yes, but for our own interests, you would think that you would be like, hey, you know what? I'm not that cool with you spying on me, especially because I'm the one giving you $3 billion a year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and using, by the way, the beginnings technologically of their spying apparatus, we gave to them so that they could spy on countries like Iran, and they were like, oh, thank you very much, and then they turned it towards D.C.
No, that's the part that would enrage me.
Like, we gave them the ability to spy, and now they're spying on us with it.
And they said, we just want to spy on Iran. Okay, I mean, come on. Who's naive enough to believe that, right? Mm-hmm. So, now, they do want to spy on Iran, no question, right? And then they're like, thanks, America. As John said, they start use our technology to spy on us.
Yeah.
But there's got to be bounds of reason, even with the deepest ally.
Yeah.
Like, if my best friend came along and said, hey, Cenk, I really need technology because I've got this nuisance neighbor and I need to see what he's doing. Can you give me the best telescope you have? And I give it to him. And then he uses the telescope to try to see my wife naked. Uh-huh. I'd be like, hey, you know what? We're not that cool anymore. Yeah. That was kind of not kosher, if you will. Okay, so, like, bounce of goddamn reason.
Yeah. At the same time, though, while I find it to be sort of odd that they're turning it around on us, like, we've earned it. Like, we've told them, we want you to have the capacity to spy on people. So how angry can we really be that they're using it on us? Like we provide, like, someday, like, right now we're close military allies. 100 years from now, 200 years from now, that might not be the case. And if they, at some point, turn the weapons that we provided on them or the defense funding that we provided on them against us, I mean, we sort of made that bed. And now we need to lie on it with them in the future, I guess.
By the way, we also
be too surprised. That's all I'm saying.
We give a tremendous amount of weapons to Egypt. So if I said, hey, at some point maybe Egypt turns on us, depending on their government, you would find that completely plausible, right?
And we've already had that situation happen. We gave weapons to the Mujahideen, and then they eventually turned them around against our helicopters and our soldiers. We armed them.
Yeah.
Once you give it away, you can't tell where the barrel is going to be pointed. And that goes with intelligence gathering as well.
So don't get us wrong. We're saying we live in a glass house, and maybe we should have not given them the spying technology in the first place and go, oh my God, they used it against us.
How dare they?
Right. Now, having said that, the White House is right that it is particularly problematic to then use that not just to spy on us, but then to undermine us.
Yes.
So, in essence, that's John's point, but brought to the issue of not weapons, but spying. So, Israel's not using their weapons against the U.S., obviously, right? But they are using the technology weapons we've given them against us by saying, you want a peace deal with Iran, we don't want you to have a peace deal with Iran, we're going to undermine that peace deal. And at that point, by the way, we might have to use actual weapons, right? You might have to send actual soldiers to Iran, they might have to die for this cause, but I'm going to undermine you anyway, given the tools that you gave me.
Yeah.
So thanks a lot. And so that's why the Obama administration and the White House is super pissed now, and they should be.
Yeah. I don't think you can really blame them for trying to find out as much as they can. And I guess once they have the information, they're going to do what they can to derail it. And so they provide it to the Republicans. I'm frustrated with the Republicans for taking foreign intelligence to attempt to undermine the president. I mean, can you imagine if the Democrats took information provided by any country? Like, let's not even go to, like, Pakistan or something. If Germany provided information to Harry Reid and then he undermined George Bush's negotiations, can you imagine the heads exploding in D.C.?
Well, here, let's go a little further in that same analogy. The French, who were opposed to the Iraq War, or the Turks, even better yet, opposed to the Iraq War, deep ally of the United States in the region, spying on the Americans, find out critical information about us, right? And they are against the Iraq War. They don't want the United States to go to war. And they undermine George Bush's policy by telling either important partners or the world, hey, here's America's secrets and why you shouldn't trust them when they tell you you got to go take out Saddam Hussein.
And the case actually was built on nonsense, so they could have undermined the satellite photography, or they could have done that, possibly.
I think that a lot of people would have at that point stopped calling them great allies, right?
The French.
The French, the Turks, whoever in that analogy they gave the information. And also, to your point, the Democrats would have been considered traitors for
yeah, they would have been traitors.
Taking that information, using that information in public. By the way, it's classified information. I think there's a guy in hiding in Russia named Edward Snowden because he's a traitor and he's treasonous and he took classified information and shared it with people he shouldn't have. So are we now pursuing the Republican politicians who shared that classified information? Are we pursuing the Israeli ambassador, Ron Dermer? Are we pursuing Netanyahu?
Yeah.
Is Netanyahu going to have to hide in Moscow as well?
I don't think so.
Okay, and that's the Young Turks. The reason I wanted you to hear this is simple. It's just 2 points. One, we give Israel $3 billion a year, most of that in military aid. And we are supporting apartheid. We also are not being honest. If we challenge Snowden for what he did and call him a traitor, they are correct. Then why aren't the people who took classified documents and intentional malice aforethought spying and shared them with Republicans, the neocons, the warmongers, to help derail this peaceful settlement? And it's none of those people are being held accountable. That's just blatant hypocrisy. In a moment, we're going to look at the report lists the Grand Canyon's Colorado River as most imperiled. Also, I'm going to share from our environmental segment a Bruce Melton Truth Out look at exceptional slowdown of the Gulf Stream from the Greenland melt. Do you remember the movie several years ago, The Day After Tomorrow? A science fictionalized account of climate change about the collapse of the Gulf Stream and how it triggered an instant ice age combined with sea level rise jump of 30 feet. I'll tell you about that as well. First, I just want to mention I told you that we have now, after a year, a new toothpaste. It's called Clean Teeth. It's fluoride free. There's no sugar, no saccharin. There's no artificial flavors, no white. It has natural whitening power. It is great for helping fight gum disease and bad breath and bacterial buildup with regular brushing. So here's what's in it. In the Clean Teeth, which is a larger tube, it's almost twice the size of the old tube, you have clove oil, tea tree oil, wintergreen oil, myrrh extract, lavender extract, marigold, Purdue, basil extract, nutmeg extract, guar, calcium carbonate, that's your baking soda, menthol, water, natural glycerin, vegetable base, and fresh mint essence. That's it, nothing else. So in my opinion, there is no better toothpaste in the world. If you can find a better one, buy it. But it took me a long time to create this, to test it, to perfect it. And I think it's only about $7 a tube. The other one was close to $14. So you're getting twice the size at half the price. How about that? So give a call. And if you would like to get the new product, Green Teeth, call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or you can go up on GaryNoll.com and order it over the internet. If for any reason you can't get through on that 877-627-5065 number, call 646-926-5422. That's 646-926-5422. And that way you can get either Bug Out, Rock Hard, or the new toothpaste, all back in stock. Now let's take a look at what's going on in the Grand Canyon and the Colorado. Why is the Colorado River important? Because it supplies water to tens of millions of people before it reaches either the Gulf or California. According to Terra Daily, the conservation outfit American Rivers, the section of the Colorado River flowing through the Grand Canyon is most endangered freshwater in the United States. Every year since 1984, American Rivers put out its America's Most Endangered Rivers report. Now, this year's report lists threats like harmful human development, groundwater depletion, uranium mines, as just a few of the reasons why one of North America's most iconic stretches of river tops the 2015 list. It's the third year in a row the Colorado River has held the dubious distinction. Quote, "The Grand Canyon is facing the biggest threats in a generation. The Colorado River in the Grand Canyon is an irreplaceable national treasure that should be preserved for all of us for all time. The Grand Canyon is not for sale." The new report focuses on two key development projects, which environmentalists say will put undue pressure on the vulnerable water system. The first is a plan to construct several large commercial buildings and 2,200 homes in Arizona, small resort town in the south entrance to the Grand Canyon National Park. The report's authors say pollution and groundwater depletion from the project threaten Colorado. The second plan, the Grand Canyon Escalade Project, calls for construction of a 2 million square foot tourist development center that enables large numbers of visitors to visit the bottom of the Grand Canyon by way of tram lines and stairways. Critics contend the construction will pollute the river and upset the fragile ecosystem, an ecosystem that holds the last remaining populations of some of the Southwest's rarest native aquatic species. So, one more reason that the developers get in there, everything else is adversely affected. The Gulf Stream plays an immensely important role in moderating the climate of eastern North America and Europe. It was 7 years ago that I did my first full hour on the 12 tipping points. Now there are 32. Four of those have already tipped. There's nothing we can do about them, and others are tipping now. Greenland was melting faster than anyone predicted. And I said at the time, we're in chaos theory. There is no accurate mathematical model when all this stuff is going to happen. And it's going to happen in our lifetimes. A lot of it's happening now as we speak. Now, according to Bruce Melton, Truthout, Greenland melt impacts ocean current processes in the North Atlantic. And for years, contradictory research has alternately said, well, the Gulf Stream was slowing, and then it was not slowing. And the latest research looks at the Gulf Stream in a different way and has found that Greenland melt has been influencing the Gulf Stream for more than a century, and the evidence has been staring us right in the face for a generation or more. As I mentioned the Day After Tomorrow, the movie, for those of you who saw it, it was a science fiction climate change movie, mostly fiction, about the collapse of the Gulf Stream and how it triggered an instant ice age combined with the sea level rise jump of 30 feet. Now, while a real collapse of the Gulf Stream would not be anywhere near as dramatic, this is a very big climate science discovery. And it should make us all very concerned that the Gulf Stream is actually slowing. And this is a massive hole in the global warming signature in the North Atlantic. The only place on Earth where the temperature has fallen since 2001. It's this hole that has provided clues. The great ocean currents are intricately tied to our climate system, and the Gulf Stream is a critical part of the largest ocean current on Earth. Implications of what these researchers are calling an exceptional 20th century slowdown of the Gulf Stream are critically important to climate as we know it. Just imagine, warm water is brought from the tropics in South America up and around Greenland and then back down again as cooler water. That's the Gulf Stream. Well, an abrupt climate change of 9 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit globally and 25 to 35 degrees in Greenland have been identified from ice core evidence, and the primary driver in these changes is very likely increased fresh water from melting of the iceberg discharge in Greenland. Over 20 of these events can be seen in layers of highly accurate ice cores and in very distinctive changes in ocean floor sediments in the North Atlantic. Most of these abrupt change events, both warming and cooling, occurred in a few to a dozen decades and possibly even just a few years, and they typically persisted for several thousand years. Now, ongoing changes in the flow of the Gulf Stream are no guarantee of an abrupt climate change, but the evidence from the past is clear. Ocean circulation changes related to the Gulf Stream because of increased fresh water, meaning the hotter it gets, the more the ice, 2 miles thick in Greenland, melts, and that ice becomes water and starts to run into the Atlantic. And that can create extremely dramatic climate change, and it has in prehistoric past. And this new research, just right out now, looks at the Gulf Stream in a different way than previous work that has simultaneously shown slowing and no change. Evidence of the stream slowing, a hole in the warming signature, has been apparent in global temperature change since 1990. And the location of this hole in the North Atlantic is in a crucial area where the Gulf Stream water sinks. And this sinking of warm water buries heat and carbon dioxide in the deep ocean in a massive global current that stretches all the way from the tip of Africa to the eastern and North Pacific. This current has no influence on our climate that is just as massive as its size would indicate. So the scale of the Gulf Stream is immense. It is the fastest ocean current on Earth. It flows from the tropics to the Arctic and represents a segment of the largest ocean current system on the planet. And it is the thermohaline circulation. At its peak off Cape Hatteras, the Gulf Stream transports 150 SVER DRUPS, or 21 cubic miles of water per day. It flows at an average jogger speed of about 4.5 miles an hour, and throughout its upper several hundred feet, it's about 50 to 60 miles wide and is about 3,000 feet deep. So the total flow in the Gulf Stream is greater than all the world's rivers combined. All of this warm water from the tropics ends up in the North Atlantic between Newfoundland and Norway. So the thermohaline circulation, meaning thermo, temperature, and haline, salt, extends from Greenland around the tip of Africa all the way to the Pacific Ocean, and the circulation itself is caused by sinking water in the North Atlantic and to some extent around Antarctica. And the circulation moves along the surface from the Indian Ocean towards Greenland, and as it flows, evaporation makes it saltier and heavier. As it cools in the North Atlantic, it becomes even heavier, as cold water is heavier than warm water. And at some point, it gets heavy enough to sink. This happens between Canada and Scandinavia at the exact location of the warming hole. In general, the water that has sunk is called bottom water, but water sinking to the south of Greenland, east of Labrador, is called the Labrador slope water. Now, much of the sinking water goes all the way to the ocean floor, where it flows south all the way down the Atlantic, back around the tip of Africa, then around Australia, with some of the water surfacing in the Indian Ocean. The rest of the circulation rises up off the coast of South America and begins its surface journey back towards Greenland. The entire trip is about 1,000, takes about 1,000 years. So Greenland's ice loss is the problem. The 10-year average for Greenland ice loss has increased more than 500% in the last 10 years. That's huge, huge. And Greenland shatters its ice loss records almost every year. So keep that in mind. I've mentioned it many times. The problem of the future is going to be Greenland melting because of global warming. But because you have thousands and thousands and thousands of these little lakes in the summertime when it gets warm there, and then all that water goes down to the bottom and it acts like a skid and brings, because it's at an angle, it allows these huge pieces of ice to go right into the water. And then that causes this whole problem. So this tremendous discharge of fresh water moves south along either side of Greenland into the North Atlantic, where it is blocked from further southward movement by the northward flow of the Gulf Stream. So because fresh water is less dense than salt water, it floats on the surface and basically acts like a plug in the stream. The density variation between the two water masses, salty and warm, or fresher and cold, that's where the plug persists. So I'm just giving kind of a semi-scientific explanation for all this. And to give you how bad it is, Greenland's ice discharges increased over 600% since 2000. We have abrupt climate change and the collapse of the Gulf Stream. We have evidence from Greenland as fast as a few years, meaning we could be seeing big collapse in Greenland in the next 2 to 5 years. And Greenland's temperature change is twice that of the global average. And so pay attention to Greenland and pay attention to Antarctica, because if you wonder where the biggest natural disaster is going to occur, that's it. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.